So I guess we'll start this one off in a standard way. Welcome to episode 45 of Marooners Talk. This is our 2012 wrap-up, best and worst of the year.
Or, damn it, Chris, you only had one job.
Yeah.
I made my lists. I just didn't categorize them or really put a whole lot of thought into them because it took me about 30 minutes this morning.
So basically, you just wrote some shit down on paper without any organization.
Well, I didn't. I typed it up in Notepad, actually, so I didn't even take the time to actually write anything.
I was going to say, did you just, like, go on Metacritic and get the worst and best rated games? Like, all right, here's my choices.
No, actually.
Obviously, the worst game of the year is Resident Evil 6.
I have a really bad memory of what came out in what particular year. So I went to Wikipedia's 2012 in gaming and Wikipedia's 2012 in film. And I just went through the release date list. And I was like, okay, this one. I liked this. Okay, this one. I didn't like this. And I built my list that way.
I did the same damn thing, actually. Because it's so hard to remember what the hell there is.
Yeah. And some stuff came out early in the year. Maybe it feels like it was last year. Or some stuff came out late last year that was actually early this year.
Yeah.
I just based mine entirely off of what I played. So.
Well, no. I only base it off of stuff I've actually seen or played. I just couldn't remember everything that came out in the year.
I guess I just don't have as hard of a time remembering when things were. But you've been 30 longer than me, so is that something I should expect coming up in the next like month?
Your memory is going to start to just take a nosedive.
Crap, I'm going to start taking those omega-3 supplements now.
Yeah, my doctor recommended that I start taking omega-3 and the fish oil and all that kind of crap.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's time to get started on that. Hold on a sec, AFK Walgreens. Oh, man. 2012? In some aspects, kind of a meh year.
I think that's a good thing, though. In all honesty, like, would games like Dishonored and Sleeping Dogs have gotten nearly as much press if games like Bioshock Infinite had actually come out this year?
Oh, hell no.
Exactly. So I'm actually kind of glad because I am so happy Dishonored and Sleeping Dogs could be future franchises.
Well, it's also they came out at just good times of year when, like, I mean, Dishonored had what, Halo 4 really to go up against, and Halo 4 wasn't terribly huge competition because it were two completely different games, and then it came out far enough ahead of Assassin's Creed that it didn't have to worry about going head to head with that.
Yeah. And it was on two systems where Halo was only on one.
It's on three systems if you include PC.
Yeah.
Everybody I went to school with was playing it on PC because they're all the PC gaming master race.
Yeah.
And, I mean, because there were huge releases this year. I mean, we had Mass Effect to start the year, as everybody who's listened to this show for more than 3 minutes has heard. Halo 4, obviously, Assassin's Creed 3, Black Ops 2, Darksiders 2. I mean, the summer was kind of bland, but, I mean, that's the summer. You'd think that there would be more releases in the summer when there are, you know, like, kids who have free time and supposedly jobs and thus disposable income.
God, and it's crazy to think, like, Kingdoms of Amalur was this year.
Yeah.
That came out earlier in the year, and what the hell else was early? I mean, like, obviously, Final Fantasy 13 too, but who gives a shit?
Mists of Pandaria. That was huge. What the hell is that game? Guild Wars 2?
The Vita launch. I mean,
yeah, but we already all forgot about that.
Hey, I had to make sure and remember that it was this year instead of a previous year.
Yeah, I mean, it feels Sony like it's been out. Has longer. Already forgotten about the Vita.
Hey, we got Persona, and that's eaten my life the last few weeks. So
yeah.
The Wii U launched and didn't outsell the Xbox 360.
The Wii U launched to sold out pre-orders, except now you can find stacks of them in stores because it didn't really do as well as Nintendo's falsely built demand was expecting.
You know what? I had a friend of mine. I'm not going to call out her name, even though she's not going to listen to this show, but she wrote her dissertation. She just got a master's or a PhD or whatever in marketing over in the UK. And she was talking to me about it off and on because apparently I'm an expert on games. And she was also telling me how the Wii U is going to be this huge success. And how it's just going to, like, trump everything the Wii did. And the whole time I'm telling her, and I'm like, you're completely and totally wrong. And I'm not saying this to be mean. It's just the selling points of this system are things that only the hardcore audience understands. And the things that are going to be to the detriment of this system is that it's cost prohibitive compared to where the Wii was when it launched. Mm-hmm. It's not intuitive compared to the Wii.
No one knew what the hell it was.
Yeah, nobody knew what the hell it was. Nobody knew marketing what was coming out for it. And you only get one stupid DS controller. And I stopped calling it an iPad controller because the screen isn't as good.
What was great was the commercials for the Wii U all featured people playing with regular fucking Wii remotes. Like,
that's the main thing. It's just the Wii remote compatibility.
But no one would have known, though, if you weren't into gaming and you weren't paying attention to the Wii, you didn't know. Why would you think it's anything but a peripheral? The system looks pretty much the same. They're not going to recognize the games that are all of a sudden like, oh, these big AAA titles are out. They're just going to see Wii remotes and a white box and be like, oh, hey, I can buy this to go with my Wii. They're just not going to know.
Your Skype avatar looks very angry.
I don't even remember why I took it.
Are you playing Mass Effect 3 before you got on the podcast?
No, actually, but I have started a new playthrough of Mass Effect 3, and after the year to sit down and think of it, and the biggest complaint a lot of people had about the end was that the three options, or the four options now, didn't make sense for the character. Well, I'm sorry to say this, but the character does not dictate what happens at the end of a quest. You know, and I had that realization the other day. So I'm sorry that the three options did not fit for what you thought should have happened at the end of Mass Effect. But Commander Shepard was handed lemons. He had to make the best lemonade he could.
Well, my main complaint about it was that you had this branching story from the start, except instead of those branches actually taking their own paths, you might as well have just had four branches to begin with. Because it's all going to result in the same thing other than the small cutscene of who's alive and who's not at the end.
Yeah, true. But in all honesty, though, there did need to be a fifth option where Commander Shepard passes his intelligence check and tells everybody to blow up the Citadel. Because seriously, the little space child is all, well, I control the Reapers and I am the Citadel. And I just would have been like, all right, hold on a second, pull out my iPhone. Yo, Admiral Hackett, Shepard, blow up the Citadel. Don't worry. I'm here. It's cool. Just blow it up. I'm fine with that. I'll, like, survive like the Master Chief.
Right.
No, it was from a video game from, like, 100 years ago. No, don't worry about it, Hackett. Just do it. No, your kids don't want to play this game. Just blow it up. Just come on, damn it. So, I mean, that's pretty much how it should have happened. And I imagine by that time in the future, they'll be at, like, iPhone 6.
Well, they're farther in the future than that if we're doing a major number every other year.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, they would have reset a few times. They would have, like, quit making the iPhone and then gone back for a remake every few years.
Yeah, for all we know, in, like, 5 years, they're going to rename the iPhone the Newton. And then we'll have the Newton for a while because we'll get away from this whole I thing. Or maybe it'll be the Phone Pro or the Pro Phone. You know what? I'm cool with having a Pro Phone.
I'm not cool with having an Apple phone, though. That's my problem.
That said, though, I did get an iPhone 5 this year. Mm-hmm. I'm so far mostly positive about it, especially now that there is a Google Maps app for iOS.
Yeah, so that came out this week, right?
Yeah, and it's really hard to find in the App Store.
Geez, shocking.
Like, I was talking with one of my friends on Twitter about it, and everybody's like, oh my god, it's on the App Store. So the first thing I do is I go to the App Store and I search Google Maps, because, you know, that would make sense. Everything else that Google makes comes up in an App Store search for Google Maps, except for Google Maps. You had to get linked directly to it to be able to find it. And, well, now you can find it directly in the App Store. And it has a 4.5-star rating based on 18,839 reviews.
Yeah, I'd expect it to be a lot higher.
Well, I think because people are just now able to search for it and find it, that'll probably skyrocket with a lot of, this is way better than Apple Maps.
So did they get, because I know one thing that Google was holding off on before re-releasing it into the App Store was adding in something. Was it the 3D view that they added in?
I believe it's there. I haven't really tinkered with it because I think that's dumb. Like, seriously, why do I need to see things on my phone in 3D when I could just, I don't know, look at them?
That's true.
You know, especially because it's like, who wants 3D view while they're getting directions? And let's be honest, a large portion, and I'm not going to throw any numbers out here because that would just be stupid and make me look unprofessional. A large portion of iPhone users are getting their directions for walking directions. Probably when they're in a city that they have no way looking around. Why do they need a 3D view when they're there?
Well, see, now I don't really do walking directions, but then I do driving directions more often than not. But even that I wouldn't need 3D view for. It's more, you know, every now and then someone just wants to look around on a map.
Yeah, I have Google Street View for that.
I have superior services to do that.
I have something. Really, in all honesty, it's like I have, and then Google is involved in it somehow. I wouldn't be surprised if Google ran Dropbox. Because it's like the only really non-Google service that I really use. Because Dropbox is amazing.
Dropbox is awesome. I've got it set up on all of my computers and on my phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
hell, I even have it on my Nook now. It's great.
That's just weird, sir.
Isn't it? Yeah, but hey, it's useful.
No, I was saying it's just weird that you have a Nook.
I love that thing. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's the Barnes & Noble one, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
I've seen them when I've gone to Barnes & Noble, but I haven't touched one.
They're great.
I still like my iPad 1.
Yeah, okay, that works too. Yeah, as long as it's not Kindle, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's still alive and kicking.
I haven't bothered getting a tablet. I keep wanting to, but I never put the money out for it.
I have a tablet computer, and I have a legit tablet now. I got a Wacom Bamboo.
Nice. I got one of those for Lindsay this year, actually.
At some point. They are amazingly fun for Photoshop. And like school stuff. So, but I think we can all agree that the best app of 2012 is Google Maps and the worst is Apple Maps.
I haven't used either one yet.
Dude, Apple Maps is bad.
I'm still on my 4.
Yeah, like even. You just haven't updated to iOS 6. Don't.
No, I'm not. Because I know I don't want Apple Maps. And because I'm still in a 4, I don't want to update to a software version that high.
Well, my 4 ran 6, no problem. Okay. If anything, it ran a little bit smoother and everything looked prettier.
Oh. Right, I might try it this weekend then.
Yeah, but Apple Maps is just bad. Even if the directions didn't get you screwed up, there were just too many glaring software problems.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just... It just didn't look as... Like, the detail of the maps didn't go down as far as Google does. Trust me, I mean, Google has cars that just drive around and see where roads are. Right. But, you know, God forbid that TomTom, the creators of one of the best-selling navigation solutions for cars, could find where side streets were. But, you know, I mean, that's just expecting too much.
Apple shouldn't have released Apple Maps the way they did.
No, they shouldn't.
You could have just stopped with they shouldn't have released Apple Maps.
I'm like, all right,
well,
guys.
Well, there was an issue they were having with Google, and that was...
I believe it's called Android.
No, there was something else. They were having some discussion or some issue with the Google Maps licensing.
That's unfortunate, because Google Maps is great.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So,
so we discovered our best and worst apps, apparently.
Yeah,
so.
Completely by accident. And we've also had like our old man discussions.
Yeah.
Because apparently, we're all old men now.
Movies.
Yeah. Adam, why don't you start us off, sir?
That's a really tough call, though. I mean, God damn it. I would say Cabin in the Woods is my favorite. I don't necessarily think it was the best. But it was by far my favorite movie of the year.
It was pretty good. I mean, we talked about this earlier this year, but it really kind of fell apart for me towards the end.
I was with it the entire time. Like, and I've watched it a couple times with commentary and stuff like that on Blu-ray. I love that movie, and it gets better every time I watch it. So
I've never watched a movie with commentary.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm such a nerd. I watch all of them.
I don't like hearing people talk over movies.
I am the same way.
You know, I don't care if it's the creator of the movie. Like, I would rather sit down and talk with them about it as opposed to sit there and listen to them talk about it in a contractually obligated situation.
It depends on the... Some commentaries I try to listen to and they're just terrible, and then some are amazing. Joss Whedon does great ones. I mean, The Avengers and Cabin in the Woods were hilarious, and I've seen them enough times to pretty much be able to keep up on the plot without having to hear the movie, which... kind of sad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is The Avengers. I mean, it's kind of a great movie.
Yeah. The Avengers is my pick for best. Just I watched it again last week.
Yeah, that's my tie with Cabin in the Woods. I mean, it was pretty much a perfect comic book movie.
Yeah. My pick for best movie of 2012, Robot and Frank.
Well, shit, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it is amazing. Like, honestly, there was another movie, or there's like a handful of movies that like I would say were my favorites of 2012, and none of them were in any wide release pictures. Even though, like, I loved, you know, The Avengers. I mean, you guys know this. I loved Prometheus and Dark Knight Rises. But my favorite movies of the year were all indies. Misty introduced me to this wonderful indie cinema that's really close to our apartment. And so I was just, you know, I've seen like 4, 5, 6, 7 movies there this year. So,
and that's the problem. I don't get a lot of that stuff, until it's on video. Like I just saw, Seeking a Friend at the End of the World. I just saw, Safety Not Guaranteed, which were incredible films, but they weren't released anywhere near me. So,
yeah. Have you had a chance to see Bernie yet? That's on Netflix.
I have it on my instant queue.
It's hilarious and amazing. And Jack Black is really entertaining to watch. And so is Matthew McConaughey, strangely enough.
I'm honestly more surprised about Jack Black being entertaining because I haven't found him entertaining.
No, it's just he's really good and he has a great character. And at the end of the movie, because it's all based on real events, they're showing some like essentially kind of like making of B-roll stuff, and he actually went to the prison where the real Bernie is and interviewed him for the role and like talked to him about stuff. And I thought that's actually really professional for Jack Black. Like, I am amazingly surprised at that level of professionalism.
That's not what you expect from him.
No, I expect him to just like come up there and like just go all crazy with like Steve Zahn or something. So that said, I do love Saving Silverman.
He had some good stuff in the back there, yeah. But I am very curious about Bernie. I threw it on there, but Jack Black does make me a little bit trepidatious nowadays.
Don't worry, he's good. I mean, the whole movie is really good. And what really kind of sells it too is like the townsfolk, and they're hilarious as well. So. But no, Bernie was good. But yeah, Robot and Frank, my favorite movie, and probably, in my opinion, the best movie of 2012. Because it's hilarious at times, heartbreaking at other times, and then heartwarming there throughout. And Peter Sarsgaard plays the robot that I wish I could own. Because he's so helpful. He helps an old man plan jewelry heists, okay? I mean, how is that not the best robot ever?
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. You're right.
So, I mean...
I've got my list of bests. I think I've seen 4 movies that came out this year. Avengers, Brave, Dark Knight Rises, and this... You know the Will Ferrell Spanish movie? Castle de mi Padre.
Yeah.
That.
How great and or terrible was that?
It was a bit of both. Yeah.
It was Will Ferrell. What do you expect? I mean, it's the guy who came up with Bitch Hunter.
I would watch that movie or TV show. Sorry, like Lindsay and I both want to watch a actual series of Bitch Hunter.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Will Ferrell has his moments where he's done some pretty damn great movies. Yeah. Let's be honest, but he's also done some really terrible ones. So,
well, the thing is that Will Ferrell has great moments. You know, right. So you have to keep him in a part that is just moments. So like old school, Frank the Tank,
yes.
Moments.
Yeah.
Zoolander, Mugatu, moments. You know, I think he's like Jack Black, you know, he's a great supporting character. He's not supposed to lead anything with the exception of Stranger Than Fiction.
Anchorman was great. Old school, I guess he has supporting and Stranger Than Fiction was great, but he did like serious role.
That was a strangely amazing movie too.
It really was.
Oh, like,
that's the one where in all honesty, the character.
Yeah, the character in the what's that actress's name?
Emma Thompson's novel.
Yeah, Emma Thompson's novel, and he has a lot of scenes with Dustin Hoffman of all people. It's just like those two. When you think about it, you just like somebody says, "Oh, I'm going to make this movie with Will Ferrell and Dustin Hoffman." And Will Ferrell's just like this like IRS guy, and Dustin Hoffman is a English professor. I'd have been like, "You're an idiot. Go away. Those two people should never be on screen at the same time ever." Unless like Will Ferrell is like in the background of like an Oscars party picture, celebrating Dustin Hoffman being amazing.
So what you're saying is you're a fan of Dustin Hoffman?
Dude, the guy's awesome. Let's just be honest here.
He's a good actor.
True.
You know,
I think the most underappreciated actor to ever play Captain Hook, in my opinion.
Oh, dude, his Captain Hook was amazing.
He had a very good hook.
Yes, he did.
You know, I don't care what anybody
still
said.
I still say poor form whenever someone does something that's inappropriate or just incorrect. Like, Lindsay. Well, my pick for worst movie of the year is technically not a new release, but it was a new version released.
I know what you're going with here.
Star Wars Episode One, with Phantom Menace in 3D.
Yep, that was number two on my list of worst. Yep.
I didn't actually see that one.
I didn't see it in 3D, but I've seen the original release, so I think I can comment on the plot and acting.
If anything that puts Jar Jar Binks closer to my face is going to be a step down.
I will say that it had the worst trailer of all time. With that ridiculously hyper and cheery guy being all like, "Oh, look out for Sebulba." Like, you know the one I'm talking about, right? Yeah, it's narrated by this like hyper ADD guy. And so it's just like the normal Episode One trailer, but the whole time he's like narrating, he's like, "Whoa, Darth Maul, two lightsabers." And it's just like, seriously?
That sounds really annoying.
Like, are you narrating this for blind Jersey Shore people?
Thank God Disney bought Star Wars.
Dude, that's going to be hopefully the best thing that has ever happened to Star Wars ever.
George Lucas retains the ability to veto anything Star Wars related.
You know what? He's not going to do it.
God damn it.
He just got $4 billion to pump into schools. If he does anything to jeopardize that, you know, like...
I was so excited when I heard that Disney had bought Star Wars because, you know, they've done such a good job with Marvel. And then about a week later, I heard that Lucas retains complete creative executive decision making on anything. Anything that Disney wants to do with Star Wars, they have to run it by George Lucas for his okay.
Oh, that actually reminds me of a story I heard regarding BioWare and the Knights of the Old Republic days. Apparently, one of their forum moderators got involved in some like crazy flame war prior to the release of the game. And so he wrote up like this huge post, about, you know, all this stuff and then ended it with, "And by the way, Han shot first." And he actually got told by the company's LucasArts rep, he had to take that off because the official stance of Lucasfilm
right.
is that Han shot second.
Yeah.
because apparently,
the official their official stance is we lied in the first film. Like, that shit you saw for 20 odd years, we were actually lied about that. We were wrong. Like, we're going to pretend that didn't happen.
It, well, no, no. Here's what probably happened is that the effect was there, but then through some, like, miracle, it was erased from the film negatives that everybody saw forever.
Sounds legit.
You know, I mean, I'm sure that's how it happened. But whatever. my worst movie of the year? The Master.
Interesting choice.
It was like they took a bunch of puzzles, right? And then broke them up and then grabbed like a handful of pieces from each one and put them in a box and shook it up and then tried to put it all together.
The William S. Burroughs School of Filmmaking.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, interesting. It had a lot of great individual elements, but none of them really fit well together.
Interesting.
That said, Joaquin Phoenix was amazing, and so was Philip Seymour Hoffman, something that I kind of expect from the both of them.
What? I hate Philip Seymour Hoffman. I think he does the exact same lazy performance every single time. I hate his fucking face.
All right, yeah, then.
You know what? I bet it's a listener, and you have just lost a subscriber, so you are going to get an angry email from Philip Seymour Hoffman tomorrow and be like, I cannot help the way my face looks.
Well, not, you know, it's not so much his actual face. I mean, that's just a
I was going to say, I mean, he's probably too lazy to write the angry letter, so you're probably okay.
No, he dictates it to Amy Adams. You know? But no, it's just, there were a lot of really great ideas, but none of them really kind of worked together. And then everybody who said, this isn't a movie about Scientology, they're lying. That is a movie about Scientology, sir.
Of course it is.
Like, I love every critic was all like, oh, this is totally not about Scientology. No, it really kind of is. Like, maybe they saw a different cut of the movie where the guy wasn't some crazy cult leader. But, I mean, I'm fairly certain the movie I saw was about Scientology, sir. But, yeah, it was a pretty cool
movie. It was a pretty cool movie. Worst of the year.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with Ghost Rider still at this point. Spirit of Vengeance.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't see that.
I really liked the first I didn't really like the first one, but I enjoyed the first one. And Nick Cage movies always have that sort of kitschy, this will be funny if I'm drunk enough sort of thing. And
the first one was so bad, though.
It was bad in a way like that could still be enjoyable, like the Fantastic
Four. It wasn't. It was the most boring superhero movie ever because he didn't fight anybody.
Well, they see in this one, I was kind of like, all right, Indus, I forget how to pronounce his name, from Prometheus and Luther and whatever. Yeah, however, so. Yeah, he's fucking amazing. And he was in the movie. So I was like, OK, this will be cool. Anthony Stewart Head was in it for a little bit. I had some high hopes and it was bad. It was
Did
very
you
bad.
Learn nothing from George Clooney and Batman and Robin?
Touche. Touche.
Or. Like half of the cast of Fantastic Four in Fantastic Four.
And see, that was another movie that was so bad, but it was still fun. Like, I was like, all right.
Yeah, I've got
they actually. Yeah, at least the Fantastic Four movies, they fought people.
Yeah.
You know, in the first Ghost Rider, it was all like, oh no, it's the water boss. And then it's like, cut to him already being beaten. Like, did they run out of effects budget for, like, that one time where they showed him become the rider?
Apparently. Was it only one time, really?
Yeah, I think there was, like, just that one time. Otherwise, it was just all of a sudden, it's like, oh, no, Nicolas Cage is, like, steaming now. And then next shot, boom, he's the rider. And then what the hell was Eva Mendes doing in that movie anyway?
Well,
paying some bills? I mean...
Well, I mean, what was
Eva Mendes is really ever in any movie for a few particular reasons.
Yeah. I don't like her. I hate her stupid face.
I was going to say Dark Knight Rises was my least favorite, but then I figured that was just too trolly.
That was. That's kind of trolly. I did enjoy that movie a lot, and I recognize everybody's criticism of it, and I'm like, whatever, I still like it.
I hated it the first time. I was really disappointed when I first saw it. I was like, really? This is what's going on? But I watched it the other night on Blu-ray, and rewatching it, I really appreciated it more. I was like, okay, this is actually pretty damn good.
I liked it. I think that maybe the ending would have been better if instead of showing what Alfred was looking at, you just saw him look up and smile.
Yeah. That would have been more Inception-y, but then at the same time, he would have had a problem with everybody who couldn't accept that there were two possibilities to the ending in Inception. Yeah.
And I didn't care if, at the ending of Batman, I didn't care if he was alive or dead. That wasn't the point of the films. Like,
no.
And I think that kind of lessened the impact of it, but I still enjoyed the movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, like, a...
Again, him never fighting anyone, that was annoying.
Yeah, no, that was an excellent example of Batman never fighting anybody. And, I mean, he spent, what, like about 15 minutes as Batman the whole movie?
Yeah.
But whatever, I mean...
Two fights with Bane, and that was about it.
Yeah, and then the second one kind of got ruined by Catwoman. Spoilers! I love how she, like, totally kills Bane, and then Batman's all like, whatever, I'll run off with her for the rest of my life. Yeah, I'm glad to see that his ethical dilemma is, you know, that important.
Well, he was going to let Bane die. He did tell him he had permission to die. He didn't have to kill him. You know?
Yeah.
Which I thought that was a pretty cool throwback, not just to Bane's comics, but to the first Batman.
Yeah.
With Ra's on the train.
Yeah.
That was, although, let's be honest, though, normal Batman, a.k.a. not Nolan's Batman, would have saved him. Because Batman can't let someone die.
I'd agree with that.
But for Nolan's Batman and the universe that he built, that worked.
And that's the thing with The Dark Knight Rises. Like, I was disappointed, but it still fits so well in the series of films. I like the first two better, but goddamn, as a three-piece opera.
Yeah, it's great.
I think it should have been a longer film by far. I think it was way too rushed. There's, like, too many, like, jumps and, like, okay, like, things happen and then this, and it wasn't as cohesive as it could have been.
And that's the thing that so many people say is that they feel that the movie was too bloated. You know, a lot of people, like, the big detractors of that movie either say A, that it was too bloated, or B, this wasn't my Batman. To which B, I always answer, well, too bad. That was Nolan's Batman. You want to make a Batman? You want your Batman to be up there? Go make a Batman movie.
Damn right. I do think that it was just he tried to do too much, and I think it all belonged, but then he rushed. Like, oh, here's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and okay, all of a sudden you're a detective now for almost no reason, and then
for
this
plot
happens.
Device.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, and then, like, the Gordon getting captured and then escaping, like, everything seemed so poorly paced and quickly rushed through just to get to Bane kicking Batman's ass.
Dude, and Tom Hardy, though, was epic as Bane.
He was not as good as the Joker, but he was great.
Well, I think he was different.
Yeah, and no villain lives up to the Joker. I mean, the Joker is Batman's villain. I mean, the Riddler's good. The Scarecrow is great. Clayface, Killer Croc, like, all of his villains are wonderful in their own individual ways.
I just think that Heath Ledger did a much better job of portraying a villain that was just incredible.
Yeah,
like it was a much better creature character than I think any of the other villains could ever be. But Tom Hardy was still great.
Yeah, he was still great. But I do wonder how much of that is being painted by our perception of at the end of this movie, Bane ends up being a lieutenant and not the boss.
I love that shit.
Yeah, like, but if Bane had been the boss, like, maybe our perceptions of his performance would have been changed.
I think I would have been much more disappointed if he was the boss.
No, I was expecting Rache to return somehow, but
yep.
The twist of having, I mean, okay, spoilers, Talia come in, and
the people who listen to this, if it's a spoiler, I'm sorry.
Okay.
But it was the most disappointing of the Nolan Batman movies. But saying a disappointing Nolan Batman movie, it's still like epically better than half of the crap that came out.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, I'll be honest, I think I enjoyed it a little bit more than The Hobbit.
I still have not seen The Hobbit yet. That's what I'm doing tomorrow. But
Me too. I really enjoyed The Hobbit. And I saw it in the 3D high frame rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the high frame rate is a great idea. And I think that Peter Jackson made a great first step into it. And some of the footage looks amazing. Like, the 3D really pops. Like, it's the best 3D presentation out there since Avatar. And, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Adam can't see 3D.
Yeah.
Well, I just think it's too dark. Like, there's that. Yeah, okay.
But the darkness thing is Saul.
And that's what I'm waiting for. Like, Avatar was just too gray and sort of, it was just too dark. And when I saw the movie without the 3D and I saw how vibrant and bright it was, I'm disappointed I saw it in 3D. Because I think that
because you can't see 3D, that you didn't get that brightness to pop. In 3D, because I can tell you, having seen it in IMAX 3D and having seen it on Blu-ray at home, it looks so much better in IMAX 3D. And the brightness is not a problem at all, because I'll be honest, like, the movie almost looks cheap in the high frame rate.
I heard it looks kind of soap opera-y.
It does look soap opera-y. It looks masterpiece theater-y. But when you get to those, like, really effects-heavy scenes, like the trolls at the campfire, or the goblins under the mountain, like, that stuff just looks so real. Like, it looks like they're there. Like, they're really, and then the Gollum and Bilbo scene is just together. And there's just this sense of, you know, all of these digital elements being very alive.
See, I'm really disappointed because Lindsay can't do 3D. It gives her migraines. So I'm going to have to see it.
I'm also disappointed that apparently The Hobbit could still be spoiled for her.
That's disappointing.
I mean, she probably hasn't read it.
That story has been around for almost 80 years.
There are comic books. There's anime. I think I saw the animated one when I was like
six.
She's
seen the animated. No, I don't think.
Then how is there any spoiler for The Hobbit? She knows what happens.
Yeah. No. The 3D gives her migraines.
Yes, but her Facebook, she's like, nobody spoiled The Hobbit for me. I'm going to be off Facebook all weekend. And I'm like, seriously?
Oh, well, because I don't know to what extent, she doesn't know to what extent the first film covers.
I was talking to someone last night, and I figure at this point I don't care because I've read the book and like I know the Hobbit story backwards and forwards. And I was talking to someone about how they broke up the first one and rearranged stuff, and it sounds so much better. And using Tolkien's notes to like fill out the pieces, I have much more confidence in it being a three-part film now.
I'm excited, but I want to go into it not knowing what they've put into it.
The first part kind of drags. Getting up to like them actually going on the adventure.
Well, I mean, it's a setup section.
Yeah, but I mean, it's
Fellowship
just,
did the same thing.
Yeah, but they still could have condensed it. You know, I mean, it's just the movie itself is 3 hours, so I really don't think we're going to see an extended cut of this.
Really, I mean, it is.
No, you know what? You know, I bet you. I bet you what's going to happen in them splitting it up into three movies is that they were all like, well, we were going to have hold on to this extra like 2 hours of footage, but I guess we can just now just put it in the movie.
I'm still expecting to see an extended cut just because it would fit with, I mean, because we had the theatrical cuts, then the extended cuts, then there have been so many different releases of Lord of the Rings just within the first few years.
in the day of Blu-ray, why are the extended cuts still split up across two discs?
I got the extended cut of Lord of the Rings a few months ago when it was on sale, but I hadn't watched it until this past week in anticipation of this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I opened them up and I was like, what the fuck? It's two discs. I mean, I've got the DVDs extended. I have the extended trilogy on DVD, and I can understand why that's multiple discs. But why is this Blu-ray? And I think it's because of the audio. From what I've been reading,
yes,
the work they did on the audio really was phenomenal.
Well, then it makes me sad that I just have, you know, my TV speakers.
That's all I've got, so I couldn't really tell a difference, but...
Yeah. I will say, though, because I did also watch the extended trilogy before The Hobbit, and that was a great idea because they do make some really good asides and, like, winks to those movies.
Mm.
You know, and not just, like, the whole, like, oh, that's the ring, we know what that is, but, like, just some really intelligent things, and, like, the bookend sequences with Ian Holm and Frodo. Like, because the movie opens, strangely, right before Fellowship of the Ring opens.
So, well, like, I'm gonna take my headset off for a minute.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. But that's it. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
That's it. But
yeah, we'll see it tomorrow at some point or today. Shit, maybe.
You got time, Holmes? It's only what, like, noon?
Yeah.
For you. Times.
We were going to do Cards Against Humanity in a few hours, but I think we're rescheduling that.
But I will say, like, my complaint, I really just have one complaint with the high frame rate, and that is that it looks cheap. They just need to throw, like, some filters on there, and it would be great. Like, otherwise, it's the way to see 3D presentation, because...
Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to look like old school BBC films where it's just, it looks off. And, like, you're actually there. Yeah.
It can take, in some aspects, like, the actually looking, feeling there is so strong. And it's just, it's great because it makes, like, things like Rivendell just, like, seem real. Like, I could go there. Like, you could just step into the screen and be like, sup, elves? And they'd be all like, human, how the hell did you get here? And I'd be like, because I'm sitting right over there. And they'd be like, oh. We never saw that crazy world that's always watching us, like creepy voyeuristic people. But, and especially like the visuals in the HFR really just pop. And seeing some of the things in that, like, as I said, it felt real. And I think that this is a technology moving forward as people really learn how to exploit it and use it and, like, just have fun with it is going to be an amazing leap forward for movies.
Yeah.
So, but that said, though, they need to learn some lessons from games, and there's a few instances where they could really have benefited from, like, some anti-aliasing and just smoothed a few edges, but that's probably my favorite new technology of this year. Sorry, iPad Mini. Sorry, Microsoft Surface.
Oh, I was at an event last night, and I can't talk about anything that was there, but they had on the wall, it was sponsored by Microsoft. So they had what looked to be like a 70 or 80 inch TV on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing their display on, and it actually was not a TV, it was a Surface computer.
Jesus Christ.
And so they started their presentation by swiping on the screen and moving into the next slide, and they said it was about an $85,000 computer.
You know, I was actually going to say like $1 million, but...
Well, I mean, because you could get the proper Surface tables that they've been showing for years and years now for $150,000,
$200,000. You know,
why would
I still
want that or use it? What the hell?
Why wouldn't you...
I guess, yeah, like, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, wow, that's an outrageous amount of money. I'd never use it, but then, goddamn, would that be cool.
It would be cool, that's the point.
But, like, have you seen, like, the tech demos they've done with the people who have, like, who put, like, RFID chips in, like, D&D characters, or D&D statuettes, and run that on there? And so it's just, like, you know, like, I mean, that's what I want to do with it. Trust that I want it at a reasonable price, and then I would also hope to have, like, friends who would play D&D on a regular basis to like recoup those expenses. But
yeah. Or yeah. if you open up a store that you charge an admission fee to play sessions.
Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't seen a gaming store do that. That's a pretty good idea.
I'm gonna edit this part out.
Yeah.
Giving away a business idea.
That would just be pretty stupid awesome.
That idea is trademarked, Mariner's Talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Microsoft or Wizards of the Coast or whoever else, you owe us. Yeah. I don't know, like $11 billion.
This is shit. You mentioned Wizards. I'm like, wow, that could be great. Magic table, too. You could do the online, but it would be, oh, God. I really want a service tablet now. Thanks.
I don't.
Only as a table. Only as a table, though.
So I saw somebody actually with a Surface tablet back in November, and I was all like, yep, don't care.
Well, see, I'm interested in the top-of-the-line Surface tablet that runs the full PC installation of Windows 8.
I still don't care.
I'd like that just because of the functionality. For my work stuff, I can run Excel fully. I don't have to have any restrictions because it's a mobile platform.
Yeah, you know what else you could do for probably cheaper that'll also run a full Windows 8?
A laptop.
Yeah. And it won't be limited to crappy touchscreen control schemes.
Well, now, listen, we can't say it's crappy touchscreen because the Wii U sort of lowered the bar for what crappy touchscreen functionality is.
Oh, it's on par with the DS, and we like the DS touchscreen functionality for a mobile.
Well, platform. When you put it in a tablet, like if I'm just playing a game with a stylus, sure. But if you're going to give me a goddamn tablet to mess with, give me multi-touch functionality. Seriously, like just ridiculous.
Yeah, and especially since we now live in an era of when a phone is capable of broadcasting in 720p, why can't we get a game console that does the same? Oh, because Nintendo doesn't take technology seriously. That's why. Like, I feel so bad for them because they put all of this money into developing a system that is like an eighth of a step ahead of like the current generation hardware. And this time next year, you know, we're going to have whatever the next Xbox is and whatever the next PlayStation is.
Well, you'd think they'd have learned from the Wii. They released something that was still half a generation behind of what was coming, and they did make massive profit with the Wii, but that's not a winning long-term strategy of development to develop something that's going to constantly be outclassed.
Yeah.
Yeah, lucky.
And the games are just not, I'm not impressed. Wii Sports was more fun than Nintendo Land.
I like Wii Sports. I mean, the Wii was...
me too.
Decent. There are some fun games on it, but to be honest, our Wii broke a year and a half ago, and I really haven't noticed the difference.
I was supposed to say, wait for a Wii Mini imported from Canada. I mean, but you know,
the Wii you loved with even less functionality.
Well, hell, they released that the black Wii that removed functionality of being able to play the GameCube games. So it was a Wii that couldn't do everything the Wii could do.
Kind of like how the later PlayStation 3s couldn't run PlayStation 1 or PlayStation 2 games.
Yeah, they kept removing functionality.
Well, I mean, they had to cut down the price to manufacture it so they would lose less and less and less and then eventually make a tiny amount of money.
Well, and I'm okay with what Sony did, honestly, but the Wii had so little functionality to begin with. The Wii U is such a huge disappointment. My best friends are huge fans of Nintendo. Like, they've gotten every Nintendo console ever. And so they bought a Wii U, and they bought Assassin's Creed 3 for it, the new Mario, and then, of course, Nintendo Land and stuff. And I'm just, oh, God, so disappointed. It's terrible.
Do they own an Xbox or a PlayStation 3?
No. They are PC gamers, though.
Then why did they buy Assassin's Creed for anything other than a better platform?
Well, because he's like, oh, what the hell, I'll just try it out. And he never played an Assassin's Creed before. So he's like, I'll just try it out and get it on with the Wii U, whatever, it was there. And, it's bad.
Oh, well, a little bit of a jump off topic here. best game of the year for me, Assassin's Creed 3's naval section.
Dude, that is amazingly fun.
I just like that part.
The Assassin's Creed 3 is a good game, albeit buggy as shit. Minor bugs. Nothing really too game-breaking, but just little visual and gameplay bugs everywhere, all the time. But that those naval sequences, it blew me away. Like, I could sit there. I played all of the naval sequences as much as I could until finally there weren't any left, and then I went back and I played the game to unlock more naval sequences.
I was pretty disappointed with Assassin's Creed 3 overall. Like, I don't know if it was my biggest disappointment of the year, but it was just, it was not a step forward.
I've played about 7 or 8 hours of it so far. I enjoy it.
Have you gotten to Connor yet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So I know the big, like, crazy first twist.
Here's the thing. I like, as far as the characters were written and acted, I prefer Haytham to Connor. I think Connor is boring. I think he wasn't acted all that well. I think he wasn't written all that well. I think he was a forgettable character.
No, I completely agree with you there.
But Haytham, like, I really liked Haytham, and I was really disappointed at that certain point because I was like, damn it, now I have to change my opinion.
Yeah, when I got to said point, I felt really betrayed, and I'm like, well, I'm going to fucking kill you. You know?
I understand that. He wasn't even really the big villain to me. Spoiler alert, anyway. He wasn't really the big villain to me. It was Charles Lee that I really hated.
I think the gameplay is still so archaic. Like, they still have the sprint and climb button as the same thing. Like, it just...
Yeah, I think we talked about that. Or someone else was talking about
it. No, that was here, and I was all like, I haven't played it yet. And then Adam was all like, well, then I will continue to spoil it.
Yeah, I just... Nothing about it was exciting, which sucks because I loved the first two Assassin's Creeds. Like, I really wanted this to be better, but it doesn't feel like they did anything with the gameplay. They just made the game look prettier. But the amount of cutscenes too, it's like they're trying to be the next Metal Gear franchise.
Yeah, there were a lot of little, like, all right, it's time for you to start this mission. Go over here. Okay, so you walk for 5 seconds. Okay, cutscene.
Yeah.
Like, why didn't you just start the cutscene from the beginning point instead of adding in the little 5 seconds of walking gameplay?
Yeah, it was bad. And so many, like, just follow people around missions and crazy stuff. Like, it was not, I don't know. It wasn't nearly as engaging as Rome or any of the other settings, really, for Assassin's Creed. It was, it was still good. I mean, it's not a terrible game. It isn't, like, fucking Amy or anything. But
no, and let's be honest here. The first 6 hours of that game were a giant tutorial.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, that's not a very good way to make a game, is to have a 6-hour tutorial sequence.
That was excessive.
You know, I mean, it's just like, yeah. I mean, it was engaging, don't get me wrong, but it was ultimately frustrating because it's all like, stop teaching me gameplay mechanics. Yeah. You know?
One important side note, though, is that I'm ranked higher than Andy on total number of assassinations in the single player campaign.
Well,
I just wanted to put that out there.
He does also have like a real job too.
I do too.
No.
Yeah, but his
excuse.
Is realer.
Huh?
But his is realer.
Realer.
Yeah, he like works on that game. Kind of. Or something.
Which is why he has less reason.
Yeah, he should be blowing me away, but there are multiple categories where I am higher ranked than Andy.
Yo. I worked on a lot of games, but the one that I worked on an Xbox, you're not going to see any of those achievements on my profile. Just saying. Mostly because it was bad, but still, I didn't go back and get the easy achievements because I could. As soon as I was done working on that game, I was like, done. But I don't know where that was going.
But well, I think that says something about your taste, yeah.
But my favorite game and best game of the year also had a 3 in it. And it was Mass Effect 3.
See, Mass Effect 3 is high up in my best, but it's also high up in my worst.
Yeah, same here.
I've got, in my best list, I have Mass Effect 3 up until the last 15-ish minutes. And then in my worst, I have Mass Effect 3 from the last 15-ish minutes on.
See, I just I have gotten past those 15 minutes, you know, and it's just like I can't let those 15 minutes really destroy the rest of that game and the rest of that franchise for me.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, like as I've said before, like I mean, I consider the game over at a point before that, so it doesn't really bug me.
And the thing is, I feel the same way as you do. I don't think that any part of Mass Effect 3 is as good as the first two. Other than the, you know, inventory systems and stuff like that. I think the first two are better, but it's still an amazing game. And taken as, like, a whole, which it should be, you can't say it was a bad game.
No, it definitely wasn't.
Yeah. No. And but, once I get around to it, I've been planning on picking up the trilogy on PS3. I've got it all on 360, but I kind of want to get it on PS3 and see how it plays.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm going through number one right now, so...
Yeah, I will say that my least favorite game of the year also had a 3 in it. And that would be Diablo 3.
Interesting.
Because
I mean, I know your reasons why. You've talked about it.
Yeah, I may have given that game a very favorable, but a fairly favorable review in the actual review that I wrote up for it, but... Looking back on it, I mean, it's just, it wasn't as good as one or two.
That's the problem, is that it has so much to live up to, and it was still good, but it was a huge disappointment.
Like, but it was good, but it wasn't
good. It wasn't,
it wasn't Blizzard good.
I don't think Myst
if that was a
either.
Dungeon, yeah, I mean, like, if that was a Dungeon Siege game, we would have been like, oh, this game is amazing, but it was a Diablo game.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, on so many fundamental levels, it failed. You know, the always on BattleNet DLC or DRM.
Yeah, DRM. Mm-hmm.
The story being just poorly put together because it got Metzened. That's a verb now. You know, it's just, it's not there. You know, I mean, it's just like, I mean, they did a lot of things right, like the way that they worked out, like the new ability system. I think that's actually really kind of cool. But, yeah. It almost feels more like League of Legends than a Diablo game. Like, it has, like, that whole kind of, like, MOBA mentality to it.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, weird.
Yeah.
There are so many bad games, though, so it's really hard to pick a worst.
Yeah. Oh, and let's not forget that here we are, like, at the end of the year. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off there, Adam. But the end of the year is looming. We are 16 days from the end of the year as of our time recording this. And one of the listed on the box features of Diablo 3 is still not out, and that's PvP. It was playable at BlizzCon 2 years ago, but they don't have PvP. Maybe in time for the first expansion pack. Way to go, Blizzard. Love you guys. And I'd love to say that this was Activision's fault, but it's not. You know, this is just them finally reeling from the loss of Blizzard North. So, now that I'm thoroughly depressed, it's your turn, Adam.
Well, I just say, I think I'm going to have to go in the same way. I mean, mine's an obvious pick, though. Resident Evil 6, I think, was my worst game. Only because I love the series, and I had very high hopes for it. And it was just a new way of... having my balls kicked in. It was so bad.
Resident Evil has been dead for so long. I mean, it's like
I love 5. I mean, and I know that it isn't as good as
5 was bad and stupid. But
I had one. It was one of the most fun games I've ever played. But I played it co-op. Like my girlfriend and I stayed up, played through it a bunch of times. Like, well, yes. I played a lot of the bad games out there. But I actually had fun with that game. I realized it was not as good as most Resident Evils, but as a strictly co-op experience, I loved it.
It's a bad survival horror game. I mean,
well, yeah, it's an action game. It is not a survival horror game.
It's a bad action game because the way Capcom builds tension is by making the controls difficult to use, not by actually building legitimately tense situations.
I can still blow through Resident Evil 2 in under 2.5 hours with those controls, so that doesn't bother me whatsoever.
Yeah, but that's just Stockholm Syndrome, man. That's you just finally adapting to it. You're like, you know what? These aren't all that bad.
But that even shows how much worse Resident Evil 6 is, because I have admitted Stockholm Syndrome with that series, and I couldn't stand it. Like, when their way of building tension now is to literally make the entire screen dark, pitch black, not you can't see anything, and give you a flashlight that illuminates about 1/4 of an inch of the screen, and that's how you find your way around. So if you get turned around or go in the wrong direction, you have absolutely no way of seeing where you're going. Like, that isn't tension building, that's just shit gameplay. I mean, it was so god awful, and it was just bad. And tied with it is the Kingdom of Amalur, only because of the studio collapse. Because I loved that game, and I wanted to see what they would do in a couple of years, and I'll never see it.
At least Epic picked up big, huge games.
Yes, thank God. I want to know where the IP is going to go, and if they're ever going to use it again.
State of Rhode Island.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you hear how much money they were asking for that IP? It was in the tens of millions of dollars.
Are you serious? Jesus. Yeah, I know how much they made at the auction when they auctioned off everything.
Yeah, they were trying to recoup all the money that didn't get recouped in the auction.
Yep. And they made $86,000. That's what they made. So
they're still only owed what, $74 million?
Yeah, I was
like, 74,914,000.
If I was gonna know that stuff went for that cheap, I would have bid on some of the stuff. I think they put up dev kits, I think, for Xbox and everything.
Well, those got
Yeah, you can't sell those. Those are leased.
Yeah, those got
to return those. Yeah.
But that was a really disappointing situation. I think my favorite was. That's difficult because there was no game that blew my mind this entire year, but most I think it's the new IPs like Sleeping Dogs and Dishonored that got to shine and were really great surprises.
Well, see, even Sleeping Dogs wasn't really a new IP. It was True Crime Hong Kong, just renamed.
Yeah, but they did enough to it, and I think they're going to go with that and screw the True Crime stuff and make it a new series and do what they want with it, which I think is very cool.
I hope so. I got Sleeping Dogs for $24 on Black Friday and played the shit out of it. It was not as long as I was expecting it to be, but it was a really entertaining experience.
Yeah, and so was Dishonored. Like, I mean, there were problems, but almost everything about that game was really good. And I'm happy that we're finally seeing some new IPs that will hopefully carry on for a while, because I'm sick of what we have now.
Yeah, thankfully we're on the verge of a new console generation, so we'll see that crop of new IPs come up.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm hoping to see as a launch title in the next generation?
Halo 5?
Vanquish 2.
They damn well better. Oh, God.
And I know there are people at Platinum that want to make another Vanquish. But they're focused on other stuff right now.
I want Halo 5.
Halo 5, but here's the thing. Halo 5 is a given.
Yes, but I want it, now.
I want Bayonetta 2, but I'm not going to buy a Wii U to get it.
No, just wait a year and they'll put the Game of the Year edition out on another platform.
I hope so.
Well, didn't Nintendo they published it.
Yeah.
The
same thing with Mad World. Nintendo published it. It's not going to come to other... Not anytime soon, at least.
Yeah.
No, not until Nintendo goes under and Microsoft buys out all of their holdings.
Well, or until Nintendo decides to drop all their hardware business and...
Yeah, but that the moment that they do that, though, is the moment that Shigeru Miyamoto says, fuck you, I'm taking Mario and Zelda with me. You know, you guys can keep Metroid and Donkey Kong, and we'll be like, that is entirely fine. Because Retro did great jobs with both of those. Just saying. Metroid Prime, one of my favorite games of all time.
Because it was awesome, yeah.
No, that game wasn't awesome. That game was mind-blowing.
I completely agree. Yeah, that game was... It was amazing. And the whole series was great. I don't know why the hell they went with the other M crap that they did.
Oh, because the original Metroid creator hated Metroid Prime and then came out and said later that he did not consider it canon.
Just so depressing.
Yeah, apparently making a game that was a perfect spiritual successor to the existing Metroid games in terms of exploration and platforming and combat, but doing it in the first-person space and with a story that, I don't know, makes sense was just too much to handle. You know, I guess making Samus a strong, independent character who was capable of doing her own thing and being a badass was just too cool for Japan.
Oh, I guess the biggest disappointment of the year, the worst of the year, is probably the Wii U overall.
Oh, that would be the most disappointing piece of tech.
The most disappointing event. Like, the games are bad, the system is bad, the technology is... I can't find a redeeming value in the Wii U yet.
I hear really good things, though, about the Ubisoft titles. And by Ubisoft titles, I mean Zombie U.
I've heard good things. I tried the Rayman Legends demo, and it's fun. It's just... It's not worth buying a Wii U for. I was going to buy a Wii U for Rayman Legends and for Bayonetta 2.
That's the only one that would get me to purchase a system is Bayonetta.
Yeah.
But I hate their control. I hate the gamepad controller.
I wasn't too thrilled with it when I was trying Rayman.
Yeah, over a long period of time, it is not comfortable. And it's pretty awkward layout. Like, I don't think that I could play a precise action game like Bayonetta on it.
Well, it only has a, 2.5-3 hour battery life?
Yeah.
So if you're planning on sitting and pulling an all-nighter or something, you're not...
Which you better be plugged in.
Yeah. Which I did with Bayonetta 1. I beat that in one sitting. But
yeah, but you know what else? It's like, if you're going to have a controller that's going to run on batteries and it's not going to have a, you know, decent battery life, don't shoehorn people into using a rechargeable battery. Give them the option of being able to load in batteries for faster refresh times, essentially.
Well, that's the great thing with the Xbox controllers we have here. We have the Nyko plug-and-play recharge kit, but we still have the original cartridges to just toss some AA's in.
Yeah. And also, because it's not a touchscreen tablet, the batteries last forever.
Oh, yeah. I haven't put my controller on the charger in a week. I've been using it somewhat consistently.
I do love my Xbox. I'm so happy I switched over last generation of hardware.
I had been a PlayStation person through the two.
I
saw mostly PlayStation 2 stuff. Like, I had everything else, but that's what I played. And then we got the 360, and now it just feels weird to play the PS3.
Yeah, I switched over because of Halo. And I did not look back. Because just everything felt better on the 360. Oh, and the fact that I didn't have to buy bullshit memory cards. You know, that's my only real complaint about the 360 range of hardware this generation was that it didn't ship with a hard drive in every version of the hardware.
Yeah, that was kind of ridiculous.
Oh, with the arcade or the core they used to call
it? Yeah. Hopefully they fixed that for whatever.
And the 4 gig system is useless if you're going to do any kind of download. There's a lot of problems. I hate the interface, too. But
the good thing with the 4 gig system, actually, is that you can buy a third-party hard drive for a lot cheaper. Lindsay got the 4 gig system, and we got a 250 gig hard drive, I think, for about $60 on Amazon. So it ended up being cheaper than buying the 250 gig 360.
Nice. Well, that's the one thing that Sony got right with the PlayStation 3, and that was that you could load in whatever hard drive you wanted.
The one thing they got.
Yeah.
I love my PS3, but goddamn, I can rant about that thing for
Well, they did have two things right with it when you could boot Linux up on it, but then they got rid of that.
Well, and they also put out Layer early. That was a real great decision.
That was that like crappy that Dragon one?
Yes, the 6X's Flyer, yeah.
Now, next generation. Because Sony is a very fractured company. I mean, they have so many different divisions in charge of so many different things that I've been curious. I know we've talked about it briefly before, but Blu-ray in the next Microsoft console.
I don't...
It's a mix-up to me whether either if the gaming division has more pull to say no, don't do it because we want to keep something unique for ourselves, or if the Blu-ray division can license it to whoever they want.
Well, I think that they could because Microsoft, just like with DVDs, like Sony gets a cut of any round disc media. Like it's their tech, and I think that Microsoft would still, they would make money off Microsoft publishing games on Blu-ray. I would bet Microsoft would rather push for downloadable only and really get to do that.
I don't think we can because we don't have a high enough percentage of, you know,
broadband
saturation. I agree. I think they'll try to push for it. And
see, I don't think they will.
Feature, but I think they'll stay with discs.
I think they'll stick with DVDs. To be completely honest.
Well, yeah, I mean they're not going to go to Blu-ray. I think they'll stick with having multiple, multiple discs is better than trying to give someone else a cut of their money.
Yeah, but if we're already running into multiple discs on certain games on the 360. And the next console, we're going to expect higher processing power. We're going to expect much better games on it. How many discs is reasonable before they decide, okay, we really need to do something about this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because at that point, if we're running into some games that are two or three discs now, I think there was a Blue Dragon game or something like that was three discs 4 years ago.
That was four.
Four discs. So how many discs is the standard game going to be on the next console?
Well, I think it's also a matter of, I don't think that with the increased fidelity of graphics that we're going to necessarily see an increase in stuff like actual size of the game. I think we're going to see better organization of data as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least I hope we are. Because it's kind of ridiculous how huge everything gets.
Well, and that, I think that let's give Sony credit where credit's due, or else the developers for them anyway. Like at the beginning of the generation, people didn't know how to get the Blu-rays to keep up with DVD, so everything was installing. And they've mm-hmm. really fixed that. I mean, there aren't nearly the problems that they had. So I think better organization is a given. Like we've already seen it this generation. So, yeah, I think that it will be much easier for them to fit more onto single discs. I just hope it doesn't go to more compression.
Yeah.
But I don't really care. I mean, I'm ready for downloadable only at this point.
I like having my physical media. I like having the security it provides, because my biggest fear with downloadable, and it's with my XBLA collection, for example, is as soon as Microsoft decides they don't want to support the servers that host those, sure as hell better not delete my game or have a hardware failure because I'm shit out of luck.
Well, that I think is still the biggest issues, and they really need to come up with a solution for that, because I worry about that too. I mean, at this point, great, but in 5 years,
what's going to happen when they finally decide to stop supporting the 360? The XBLA games I paid for that I don't have on my system at the moment, that the servers go down. The only way I'll get to play them is if I ship my 360 or whatever and download the games online.
Yeah, I just really hope that they adopt like a Steam style solution where it's all just tied right now.
Well, even Steam, I don't buy much on Steam. I have a nice size library now, but I bought the Humble Bundles, for example, because it was $5 or $6 depending on what the average was.
That was a good deal. Yeah.
Yeah. I do all of my PC game buying through Steam.
Which is really the way to do it.
So then you're comfortable with having downloadable only purchases.
Yeah, because I trust Gabe and the guys at Valve to not screw me.
And PC's been doing that for so long. I don't want to be paying $60 for my downloads. But like with PlayStation Plus, I've gotten so many free games. It's just great to have a folder full of stuff I want to play whenever I want. And they keep track of it and stuff like that. But Mass Effect, I wanted to get that. I bought it digitally because I have the other two on disc. But I would never have paid $60 for the whole trilogy digitally. Because it will go away. I mean, my system's going to fail or Sony's going to collapse or something at some point. So,
yeah.
Sad but true.
Well, it's like I have the option now of playing Super Mario Brothers or Sonic the Hedgehog because I've got them in my closet on physical media with the original consoles. I don't have to worry about Sega no longer being in the hardware business, so they probably wouldn't support their Genesis online store, for example.
This year, this time next year, you're gonna be able to say Sega's no longer in business, probably. Then.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm glad I have my Sega Genesis and Mega Drive Classics thing downloaded on Steam.
I bought a Master System and a Game Gear the other day, Game Gear. That's what I meant. Yeah, so that was good. That was good times.
Good purchase.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Master System was my first ever console.
Atari 2600 was mine.
Well, we had one of those in the house, but like it was my sister's.
There's a vintage place near me that does games, and they do Friday Night Magics and stuff, and some there quite often. They have for $40 the old wood paneled Odyssey.
Ooh.
I think it is, and games for it. Yeah, yes, and I almost want to buy it even though there's no games for it, just because it's a wood paneled video game console.
Well, I mean, yeah, and you could say you have a Magnavox Odyssey back at your place.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
That definitely appeals to me as a collector to have a Magnavox. That'd be awesome.
Hey, if you want it, I'll pick it up for you and ship it to you.
I'll have to see if I can source any games for it, because I'd like to actually be able to use it, too.
Yeah, that was my biggest down on it. I was like, I wouldn't have anything to play, but it would look so nice in an entertainment center.
Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, there's a classy look to it.
Yeah. I mean, wood panel makes everything look good, right? That's why those station wagons are still in style.
Oh, and don't forget Jeep Grand Wagoneers.
I got this set of mini mugs, the mini Mighty Mugs, and they're the Avengers, and I just noticed that the Hulk has little nipples painted on them.
Oh, crap. We have a new bat suit problem.
Well, I mean, the Hulk's nipples would be exposed.
Yeah, I was going to say, do they disappear when he Hulks out? I don't think so. I mean, that makes more sense than bat nipples.
Yeah, no, it's just they've got this smooth texture on the body, and then looks like someone just took an oval paintbrush and poke.
I guess everything makes more sense than bat nipples, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there aren't any little pokes on Captain America or Iron Man or anything. No Captain America nipples.
This has descended into madness quite quickly. Shit.
Well, that certainly escalated.
Talk about superhero nipples. That's all right.
Do we expect anything different?
That's very true.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the Man of Steel trailer plays before The Hobbit, as well as Star Trek Into Darkness.
Oh, right. That one I want to see. Is it the new Man of Steel?
And not like the minute-long Star Trek Into Darkness that came out like last week. Like a legit trailer. With Chris Pine, or not Pine, Admiral, what's his name, Pike, doing the narration.
Thanks.
It's epic.
I'm really looking forward to that movie. And all right, who do you think Cumberbatch is going to be?
I don't care. Like, honestly, I don't care. I don't care if he's what was it, Gary Mitchell or Marshall or whatever.
Gary Mitchell.
Yeah, or if he's Khan, or if he's Mud, or if he's Joe fucking Schmo. You know, it's just, I just want to see the damn movie.
Yeah, it looks really good. Man of Steel, the new trailer was better than the first one they put out.
I didn't care for that trailer until I saw it on the big screen. And then I was like, I still don't really care about this movie.
I'm getting more cautiously excited about it.
Same here. That new trailer was that was better. I still think it looks a little bit too heavy and almost emo-ish. Like, I don't get the vibe they're going for.
Zack Snyder. That's the vibe he's going for. He's going for the Zack Snyder vibe, which is that it's going to essentially be a giant 2.5 hour long goddamn music video with heavy-handed storytelling and directing.
Well, that's the problem, is that the softer parts of it look way too heavy-handed. The good God. And it's Superman. There's definitely that element, but it should not be the focus.
Here's what I hated, especially about that last trailer, is that Clark's father is supposed to be his inspiration for doing good and for the kind of man he grows up to be. When he saves that bus, and he's sitting there and he's telling his father, should I have let him die? He says, well, yeah, maybe you should have. That's not Jonathan Kent.
Right.
That's not the kind of... And I understand, in that context, where Jonathan Kent's character is coming from. He wants to make sure that Clark isn't discovered, and he's trying to keep his son safe. But that is not the kind of thing that Jonathan Kent would say to Clark. And no, I really did not get the character. So that's where the cautious...
That part really bugged me, too. I was... Yeah, that really bugged me. And I don't like Kevin Costner as his dad anyway. But
I don't like Kevin Costner. Let's just say that.
He's got a few good roles that I like him in, and he does a good middle America kind of character, but I didn't like that writing for him.
Yeah, that was poor. And there's so many great Superman origin stories, like Birthright is one of my favorites, and there's a lot that they could have taken from that would have been very legitimate but managed to keep the Superman feel, and that's just strange. Like, go ahead and pick who lives and dies, son. That's cool.
Yeah.
Like, ugh, no, that's...
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's a Zack Snyder direction on a Nolan idea.
Yeah. Well, and is Chris Nolan's little brother?
Yeah, exactly.
Producing it or writing it or something?
The lesser Nolan.
Well, I think Chris is producer, right?
Yeah, Chris is one of the producers, and his brother, I guess, co-wrote it.
His brother, and I think David Goyer is involved in the writing as well.
Yeah.
And then Zack Snyder is directing it, the guy who brought us Sucker Punch and 300.
But I loved 300. I loved Sucker Punch.
And Watchmen.
I named his better movies, Chris.
And, you know, even Dawn of the Dead, as much as that wasn't Milwaukee, having grown up in Milwaukee, I'm sorry, but I enjoyed that. I mean, it wasn't Romero or anything, but I don't hate his stuff. I usually like it, but it just looks like the Superman is not, it isn't like it's him. It's like he's trying to do a new, like he's trying to rip off Nolan, but he doesn't know how to do it.
Yeah, well, it's just, he lacks nuance to his direction.
Yes.
And he's trying to make a character, he's trying to make us, you know, people like me who don't like Superman by making him a nuanced character. But he doesn't know how to do that. It's like he's trying to build furniture from IKEA without knowing A, the instructions for how to build it, or B, what the final product is supposed to look like.
So it's basically anyone building anything from IKEA?
I will have you know that everything I've ever built from IKEA came out perfectly fine, looked like it was supposed to on the box, and had either just the perfect amount of parts or extras of the parts I didn't really need to begin with.
Yeah, we got our new bed from IKEA, and it was missing... No, sorry, it had one different part than what was pictured, because I guess they had updated the parts without updating the instructions. But I would not have wanted to put that together without those instructions. But here's what I hated about it. They didn't label the actual pieces in any way. Like,
no,
you have to like look at the picture in the instructions and count the number of holes that are in the piece that they're telling you to use, and then go to the massive stack of wooden pieces that you have next to you and look through each one let's until be you honest. Find something that's somewhat similar to it, and then hope that you found the right one.
Well, let's be honest. Yeah. It's adult Legos.
Yeah.
Because it's exactly how you had to build Legos. It's how you still have to build Legos.
But, you know, most of the time you'll have a little A sticker or something when you're assembling furniture.
Yeah, furniture from an American place, because they got to give you that, because we don't know how to do technical writing here.
Or, yeah, or anything that indicates what something is. But it's just, here's a picture, find something that looks kind of like this, and then do this to it. It ended up working out, but it was a 6-hour construction project. Mostly by myself.
Wait, Lindsay didn't help you? I'm shocked.
A little bit, but then she fell asleep on a stack of pillows and blankets next to the wall while I did the rest until about 11 o'clock at night.
I think I remember you, because you you put up some pictures of that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember those.
I hammered my thumb twice, so that really sucked.
You know, I would say that I'm surprised that Lindsay didn't help you throughout the entire construction process, but then you told us before we started that she essentially bought your Christmas present right in front of you.
No, no, I mean, I was outside of the store, and I didn't see what she got, so it could be any number of things.
Any number of two things.
Yeah, any number of two things.
No, that's it.
Or, you know what? It could be both things.
It could be.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Or she could have gotten something else on, you know, her knowledge of what I do and do not like.
How many Green Lantern statues did they have at the store that you don't already own?
Well, I actually don't own any Green Lantern statues, and they had about half a dozen.
How many of them were Guy Gardner or Hal Jordan?
No, Hal Jordan. They had half a dozen Hal Jordans.
And I was going to say, how many of them were the Ryan Reynolds Hal Jordan?
No. They were pre-New 52 Hal Jordan comic. Right. And they had a John Stewart, and they had a Guy Gardner, and they had no Kyle Rayner and no Alan Scotts.
God, I love Kyle Rayner. Yeah.
He was very 90s, but I think he was a good character. I think he was a good Green Lantern.
He was one of my favorite Green Lanterns. Especially as part of the JLA. Standalone, I don't think he was as strong as Hal, but no. I loved him.
I think he and Wally were a good
combo,
kind of like Hal and Barry were, except more lighthearted, definitely.
Yeah,
exactly. I love how Batman took out Kyle Rayner in the Tower of Babel.
Oh, God, yes.
Mark, my contingency for Green Lantern was make him blind. And I'm just like, well, that certainly works.
Well, I mean, he's a visual artist.
Yeah.
Kyle Rayner wasn't, he? So
well, and that's why I said it was like it was specifically for Kyle's Green Lantern because he's visual. Yeah, I was that. Yeah. God, I love the whole power.
I think my favorite Batman and Green Lantern moment.
Is it the sucker punch?
I love that sucker punch.
Yeah, but you know what?
Hal Jordan takes out Batman.
Have you read JLA number 1 in the New 52?
Yes.
Yeah, when Green Lantern's like, yeah, so I got this power ring, and then he doesn't even realize that Batman has taken it off of his hand.
Yeah.
Now, that was awesome.
That was
fantastic. I'm sorry, but, yeah.
That if Batman it wasn't the Wonder Woman Superman storyline, I love storyline, I would absolutely adore that whole run. But
I'm interested to see where they're going right now, because it looks like they're actually building up a Legion of Doom.
Yeah.
Well, Cheetah and I forget who else are both now in the same super prison, and apparently Black Manta is going to be the next one to get brought in by the Justice League.
Are they going to put Lex Luthor in tiny purple briefs with the purple briefs or green briefs?
It was the green and purple.
His shirt was one, and his tighties were another.
I remember his pants being purple.
Yeah, it was like a green and purple outfit. I remember he also teamed up with Dr. Octopus in the Superman-Spider-Man crossover.
Oh, right.
And Dr. Octopus was all like, I don't know who you are, bald man, but you're stupid, and I'm trying to get out of here. And then Lex Luthor was all like, I already have an escape plan, and I'm already enacting it. You're an idiot. And I was all like, yeah, suck it, Dr. Octopus. So, speaking of, there's a great Spider-Man arc going on right now with Dr. Octopus.
Oh, we don't have Offset on.
Did we didn't discuss The Amazing Spider-Man. Did you guys see that one yet?
Yeah, we did, but it wasn't good enough or bad enough to get.
Well, that was sort of my take on it, too. I was like, oh, well, that was a movie.
Let's be honest. The best part of that movie was the Stan Lee cameo.
Oh,
I haven't seen the movie yet.
The best part of that movie is the Stan Lee cameo.
It was so, like, bland.
It was. And it's just, like, it was better than Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
It's not hard to do.
It's really not. It was better than Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. How about that?
Still probably not very hard to do. You're not really giving good.
The special effects were great. Some of the action was really cool, but there, it seemed very lifeless.
Yeah.
Which is strange because, I mean, all the actors were great individually.
Well,
but
the best part of that movie was, honestly, it was Martin Sheen's Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
And the sad part is that, well, Uncle Ben has to die.
Yeah.
See, and from watching the trailer, there was one bit where he has the, he's getting, there's the guy with the knife, and he goes, oh, you found my weakness, it's small knives.
That didn't even make it into the movie.
That didn't. See,
like,
that's
that
what
scene
I was
there, but that was like a B-roll.
Very Spider-Man-y.
It's in the extended cut, and that whole sequence is quintessentially Peter Parker, because he's just messing with the guy and cracking jokes, and they made him much more Spider-Man in that he jokes the entire film, but he's so lifeless and boring the rest of the time that I just don't care.
Doesn't feel real. It's just like he only exists in the costume. I mean, which would work for, like, say, Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But not for Spider-Man.
Dennis Leary's character and the whole Gwen Stacy plot were bad, and just, yeah.
And I don't like Emma Stone. There, I said it.
I like her, but not in that film.
I just don't like her. I mean, Zombieland, she was okay, but let's be honest, Woody Harrelson kind of owned that movie.
Well, yeah.
He really did.
That movie's somewhere over here on my shelf. I should find it. But sadly, all I can see are Taken and Halo Legends.
Oh, that's just... That's bad.
Hey, I will say, it is on Blu-ray, my Halo Legends, and there's something great about seeing the Halo Reach ad playing on a PlayStation 3. Because it's all like, what you got, Killzone?
Touche. Well, yeah, we do have Killzone, but I think that's probably turned more people to Halo than away
from it.
Let's
be honest here. I mean, Killzone can't even stand up to Gears of War.
No.
And Gears of War isn't all that great.
Gears of War is terrible.
I love the Gears series, even though it is terrible. Like, the writing in it is some of the worst you will ever see in video games. But
I just hate the gameplay. It's so clunky and slow and stupid.
It's a little slow, yeah. I enjoy it, but, I mean, let's face it, anything is better than Killzone. I mean, it's a pretty terrible series.
Yeah, but Killzone, see, I mean, on the other hand, you say you enjoy Gears of War, but you also enjoy Resident Evil 5. And,
yeah, I do like some bad games.
So how do you not like Killzone? Because those controls are terrible.
Well, that's they're terrible. The game is just bad in general. The enemies are... Everything about it is bland. And in Killzone 2, the lead character... When you walk up to a character, you're level with their belt buckle. So you're basically playing a midget. Like, they really messed up the proportions in that game. So it's just, you look normal from, you know, 6 feet away. Then you walk up to the person and you're staring at their navel at best. It's like, really? This is okay.
Well, I can at least say now from personal experience that getting proportions right on, like, game design and game art is kind of hard.
I have no doubt, but that's just one of those things that completely take you out of the experience. There's a lot, like, I pop it, I can deal with frame rate chunks and stuff, but when your character is a dwarf...
Unless you're playing something like Dragon Age or...
Yeah, exactly, then I'm fine with it, but... Yeah, it was weird.
Man, how did those relationships work out in Dragon Age Origins if you're a dwarf?
I played through as a dwarf. And let's just say that size didn't matter for Morrigan or what's her name? The bard.
Oh, the French girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was
I can't.
Or for Severin, to be honest. I wanted the achievements.
Yeah, no, My friend ran through it as a dwarf and seduced Severon just because we were all three guys living in the same house together, and our one roommate was very homophobic. So he walked into the room, and he's a male elf with a beard seducing Severon, and it was one of the best reactions I've ever seen in my life. Is that whole the way they played that out was just great.
Yeah.
I never beat that game.
I've gone through Origins a couple of times. I've gone through 2 once, and that was more than enough for me.
Yeah, I got...
My only reason I played through 2 was loyalty to Origins.
Yeah, I got about 90% through Origins, and I was just like, get bored.
Origins I enjoyed. There were definitely slow parts. Dragon Age 2 was much quicker, but so bad.
Dragon Age 2 from the demo looked like they were trying to do like Splinter Cell Conviction in terms of like storytelling.
Well, it's not giving that much ambition. They were trying to do... I don't even know. It was a very, very small story.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They hyped it up as it was going to be the big story of Dragon Age. Whereas in the first game, you saved the entire world from an archdemon of light. In the second game, you're relegated to one city, pretty much only. And you're just some guy who's bringing balance to that city. And even though it sparks something between the mages and the... what are they called?
Templars?
Yeah, the Templars. It just seemed wrong to me, but I'm like, no, it is Templars. It wasn't a grand scope story. And they reused every environment they could possibly try to reuse. I mean, you can tell when you go into a dungeon and you're looking at the mini-map and you're seeing the exact same mini-map as you've seen before, except some corridors are just blocked off with a piece of stone in a doorway. They didn't even bother removing the doorway or removing that corridor off of the map. I mean, come the fuck on. How lazy can you be?
Pretty lazy if you're being forced to get a product out the door.
There was so much badly done into it, so much reused, and so much that just was bad.
It really was. I mean, the same 3 dungeons?
Yeah.
Good God.
If that even. I mean, 3 might be an overstatement.
Well, you're right, because, no, there were 3, because there was, like, the town, basement, cellar.
Oh, well, yeah. No, yeah.
The cave. but all the caves were the same, just the doors were shut at different areas.
Yeah, there was the sewer, there was the basement, and there was the cave.
Yep.
Hmm.
But, hey, they were putting all their work towards Mass Effect 3, which, you know, okay, they forgot to make the ending, but was a better game.
Hey, there's apparently one last piece of single-player DLC that's being worked on with a bulk of their writing staff. So who knows?
No. I don't want any of their DLC because the game ended. There is no single-player left.
Well, there's... What was it? Omega?
It's pre-ending.
Yeah.
Especially, like, the Omega DLC is something that really kind of should have been in the game.
Yeah, I just... That's what I'm
and
saying.
And I'm going back through for that because I want to see a female Turian.
Well, okay. That would be awesome, but...
And she's in it. Her name is Nyrene. And apparently and she's a badass.
What are they going to do with Mass Effect 4? Like, what the hell? Oh, God.
It's not going to be a Shepard story anymore. I think they've said flat out, Shepard's tale is done.
I'd like to see something set during, like, the First Contact War.
That could be good.
You know, or like immediately after it. You know, like that would be kind of cool. You know, humanity is now part of this interstellar community, and we're at the bottom rung of it. Hell, I imagine shortly after that war, people would have been more kindly towards Batarians and humans.
Mm-hmm.
And Batarians openly practice slavery.
Batarians are dicks.
Tyrians, yeah, they deserve to get wiped out. but I don't know. I really want to play the Mass Effect DLC. And I really enjoy that game, and anything that happens before the ending, don't care. You know, I will play it. You know, it's not like there's going to be another Arrival DLC where the second wave of Reapers arrives.
Hey, you never know.
Yeah. Why do we care about a second wave? We're still fighting the first ones. So. We have probably rambled on long enough.
Yeah. I'm going to go get lunch.
And I really think that we should try, like, it should be our goal to not talk about Mass Effect 3 sometime.
It's so fun, though.
It's so easy to get distracted by it, too.
It is. And it's so easy to transition into it.
I don't know. I blame Adam.
Okay.
Sorry.
It could not be his fault. Don't care. Blaming him.
Yeah.
No, it kind of is, because it is an easy pot shot, and it transitions into everything. Bad gameplay, rushed out the door. You know, just kidding. I like the gameplay.
Yeah, the gameplay is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I even like the freaking multiplayer. Who would have thought?
I never played it. I still haven't.
It's fun. It's really good, except it's just so long to finish one match. I can get through, at most, maybe 3 to 4 consecutive matches, and then I'm like, you know what, I'm done. And that's if I'm really, really, like, sticking to it. Most of the time, 2 consecutive matches, and I'm out. Because it's 11 waves, and they take so long.
Yeah.
It's really long.
Try it out, Tom. Try it out.
I have been playing Hawken, though.
I haven't been meaning to
start that. Dude, open beta.
Yeah, no, I know. I have been keeping track of it.
Yeah, open beta just started. It's pretty awesome.
I've seen some people say, one person specifically on Twitter, I never understood why people loved Giant Mechs so much, and then I played Hawken.
That was a Kotaku article.
Was it?
Yes.
No, I saw someone actually tweet that. Maybe they took it from the Kotaku article.
Yeah, but it was a Kotaku article.
Well,
it may have been a Snack Taku article, for all we know.
Perhaps. Now I feel dirty.
Yeah.
But no, I do like Giant Mechs, but I don't think that you gain enough of the... I don't think, like... You know how a lot of free-to-play games, they have, like, the 2 tiers of currency? Like, there's the currency that you can earn in-game, and then there's the one that you get exclusively by purchasing it. Yeah. The in-game currency, it always, you know, is too slow in how quickly you get it, but it's way too slow in Hawken right now. It makes the free currency in League of Legends seem ever flowing.
That's not a good sign.
No, because League of Legends, it's like you play like 3 matches and you're capped, you know, for the day, you're good to go. But like with this, it's like you get through one match, it's like you got like 15 Hawken points, and I'm like, seriously? How am I ever supposed to purchase one of these other mechs? Or even just get, like, new stuff for the free mech that you gave me? And it just gets a little frustrating.
That sucks.
Yeah. But it happens. So.
Well, and Hawken's going to be free to play, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Well, probably end up having credits as purchasable items.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good game, but, you know, we'll see where it all goes.
Well, I'm going to go eat.
All right, you do that. I'm going to...
Enjoy that.
Yeah, I do.
Look at monitors.
For purchase or just looking at your monitors?
Thinking about purchase.
Okay.
So... All right, well, you guys take it easy.
You too.
Have a good one, guys.